Hey everybody, NFT fans, welcome back to the NFT podcast. I'm your host Eugene, aka Crypto MC. And if you are involved in blockchain gaming, you will enjoy today's episode because I'm having John Jordan. He is the media guy in the blockchain gaming world. He's a journalist, a MC, a presenter. He always joins to CGC Cutting Edge Game Conference, upcoming conference, third edition in September. The link is written down below. So, John, it's great to have you today. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me. We have plenty to talk about in the world of games and NFTs.
Great. Our goal is to explore the utilizing NFT in gaming and metaverse. But let's start with the traditional question. How did you personally, John Jordan, get in the blockchain space? And what project regarding blockchain, gaming, NFT you are involved with right now?
So I've been in the game space for over 20 years now, doing sort of various different things there, mainly focused on sort of the business side, looking at the kind of way people make money in games. So started off typical sort of PC console sort of thing, and then spent a lot of time in mobile. I co-founded a company called Steel Media, which runs Pocket Gamer, which is a pretty well-known sort of brand in the mobile space. And then actually about three and a half years ago, for the first time, I heard about sort of a blockchain and gaming. I was at a conference and some people were talking about that sort of thing. Obviously, it's just after CryptoKitties had launched. So I guess that was sort of the big focus for many people, and it kind of still seems to be the project that sort of got many people thinking about NFTs in general and games in, kind of specifically. So since then, I've really been focused on blockchain gaming with various sort of things. So I've got a YouTube channel called Blockchain Gaming World, do a podcast, various websites. Also do some consulting now for some games companies as well, in terms of how blockchain could be useful. And actually, it's interesting, in 2021, increasingly we're seeing just sort of general games companies who I guess up to this point have thought blockchain is sort of some sort of weird technology, but maybe not much relevance to games. And now I think, if not all, a lot of games companies are thinking about, you know, what are these NFT things? Should I be using them? How could I use them in my game? So that's sort of really where I'm sort of interested in how, you know, sort of games companies who've never really understood blockchain before, how they can start to use that, because I think it's a very powerful tool for just the general game space.
Well, how did you get your first exposure with NFTs? And more interesting, how do you explain what is NFT, simply in simple terms for a layperson?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't really like the term NFT actually, but I think we're sort of stuck with it, aren't we? I mean, they're just digital assets, aren't they? I mean, it's no different really to anything else that you might have had, on a computer. It's no different really to a JPEG, apart from it's secured to a blockchain, which allows us to have, ideas of kind of who owns it and how many there are out there, and obviously, depending on the blockchain, if it's an open blockchain, we can kind of put it on a marketplace and sell it. So I don't think we have to get sort of too carried away with the sort of technicalities of it. It's just, you know, a NFT is a digital asset. You know, generally we talk about images, but obviously it could be anything really. And it's just a way that you own them and you control them. You can sort of take them where you want to, and you can most importantly sort of trade them as well. So I kind of think it won't be too long before we won't use the term NFT anymore. People will just know that this is how digital assets work on the internet now. Now, effectively, I kind of think more generally, you know, blockchain is just sort of allowing us for the first time to have internet money. I mean, that's really underlying sort of what we're doing. We've had the internet for a long time, 20 years, whatever, and it's been great for information, but the whole kind of problem has been sort of payment systems, that sort of thing. And now with blockchain and crypto, we have internet money, and that allows us to kind of really sort of use the internet, I think, to its sort of fullest potential.
Yeah, great. I love that explanation. Internet money, or even internet of money, we never had before.
Yeah.
So how do you explain why NFTs are so popular in gaming, and especially in metaverse? That's another world of gaming, blockchain gaming and traditional gaming. And these worlds are existing almost separately. I didn't even know that there's a hardness to onboard people from traditional gaming to the blockchain gaming.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of purely because at the moment the technology has been sort of made by technologists rather than sort of product people. So I think it's changing actually quite fast. I mean, I do think in general, anyone who's played a game for the last 20 years sort of inherently understands that, you know, in a game there are game assets. They may be, you know, a car or an aeroplane or a or a, you know, a character, or, you know, whatever sort of type of games there are. And we sort of, you know, inherently understand that, that, you know, those things are sort of tied to our game accounts. We also sort of understand we're not really allowed to sell them, or obviously people sell their accounts, or, you know, we've had for 20 years people selling sort of, you know, World of Warcraft gold. So for me, I think the kind of what's happening for the next kind of few years is sort of gamers have always sort of inherently understood there's game assets, and obviously now with free-to-play games we have kind of game currencies, and people are very you know, people don't give a second thought to the fact that you might spend, you know, $50 to buy some in-game currency. You know, that, you know, we're just sort of used to that now. But now for the first time we can actually say that $50 you spend actually has real world $50. So it's not just $50 going to the developer who then gives you 1,000 gems or 50 gems or whatever it is. Now we actually have, I give them $50 and I get something back that actually has $50 value. A character, maybe you can sell it for more, maybe you can sell it for less, maybe you can level it up, you know, certain things you can do. And I just kind of think gamers have always assumed that they own their stuff, and then they sometimes are a bit surprised when they can't get shut down because they've tried to sell some gold to someone, or sell some sort of asset on some sort of kind of a, on Reddit or something. So I think kind of blockchain allows the you know, what gamers sort of think or kind of wish to be the case, they own their stuff and they can do what they want with it, to actually take you know, to actually become, you know, reality. So, you know, I don't think it's an example that's used a lot, but people put thousands of dollars into Fortnite. They have all these crazy limited edition skins and assets and emotes and stuff, and, you know, I think they would give people a lot more sort of enjoyment if they could then kind of sell those in the marketplace. You know, I just kind of think that's sort of where we're going in general on the internet and within gaming. So I think sort of blockchain is a trend it's almost impossible to see how it won't be successful, because I just think as soon as gamers understand they can own things and sell them, they just go, yeah, it's great, of course. I want more of that.
Yeah, what would you mention the most popular and most renowned use cases of blockchain, NFT, in the gaming and metaverse world? For example, Axie Infinity and so on and so forth, three most popular cases. Tell about it.
Yeah, so I mean, Axie Infinity is the one that's obviously blown up over the last kind of month, really. But it's been, you know, a game around for, you know, 3.5 years. So it's spent a lot of time building that out. And I just kind of think it is, as a product for someone who doesn't know anything about sort of blockchain, it's, you know, it's a pretty complex sort of blockchain sort of project. There's got lots of sort of a moving part. So you have the NFT side of things, and you have two different currencies that do different things, and you know, it's kind of complicated in terms of how you have a, you know, what a wallet means, how do I access these sort of things. And obviously it's all very expensive to start playing Axie Infinity just the way it's structured. So I think, you know, Axie Infinity is for me really interesting from a blockchain point of view. I think it is a good sort of example of how you would build and I think how many new blockchain games will sort of get built now, because Axie has proven it's kind of a, you know, a winning formula to have, like, a, you know, a basic currency, we call utility currency, the smooth love potion, then another cryptocurrency, the governance Axie shards, and then NFTs and the sort of interlinked economies between those sort of things. But for most, I think for going mass market quickly, I just think owning NFTs is the simplest thing. It's sort of the low-hanging fruit for game developers. The game developers are already, as I said, you know, whenever you make a game, there is some sort of key asset in your game. So if it's a racing game, you know, the focus is on the cars. And if it's an RPG, the focus is obviously on the character. And if it's a shooting game, the focus is on the guns or the sort of the stuff you use in the game. So I think all games have a sort of a kind of priority item. And if you can make that an NFT that people can trade, then I think people understand that, and now people understand things about, you know, we have loot boxes in most games, so people sort of understand about sort of rarity, and some things are common and some things are rare or epic or whatever the terminology is. So I think people sort of understand that, and I actually, you know, I kind of think you could even have, I think we will see this for the next couple of years, is people can have NFTs of game items that aren't actually usable in the game. So if you imagine, you know, I've been playing a game. It's a game called Raid, pretty popular on mobile and PC. And it's like a, you know, an RPG game where you get characters and you level them up and you know, all that kind of sort of a skill set, you know, basic kind of skills tree and all that sort of thing. And I've been playing that game for 2 years, you know, pretty much every day. And I've got like a really nice sort of collection of sort of tricked out characters. And if they were proper NFTs I could use in the game, that'd be great. But even if the developer said, you know, you've been playing this game for 2 years and we're going to like allow you to sort of mint a, you know, just an artwork or, you know, of the character you've used the most, and it will have some data around you. You've used this character for 15,000, you know, battles or something like that. And just to own that, I think would be quite sort of, in a sense, not valuable in a financial way. So even if I couldn't sell it, it would just sort of be the developer going to me as a person who's played this game a lot. You play this game a lot, you really love it, and we're going to give you something back. And even if it's just like a screenshot, you know, or something like that. But it is on the blockchain, and I can sort of own that and maybe use it in kind of social, on my social media and things like that. I think that'd be very valuable just in terms of sort of retention of player base and keeping people engaged. It doesn't have to always be about money. I think money is a big important sort of side of it, but it doesn't have to be about that. So I just think there's lots of different use cases that people and developers will find, you know, depending on their own project, they'll find different ways of using blockchain. So I think there's a massive range, and over, you know, it'll take 10 years for game developers to really, I think, implement blockchain. I think there's a lot of stuff you can do around sort of social and guilds and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's harder to do, I think. But I think there's so many opportunities for sort of clever designers to use.
Well, great. Almost every gamer in the world knows how the model pay to win works when you are incentivized to pay for getting best results. Now we've been seeing the paradigm shift to the play to earn model in recent years, which is blockchain allows us to do. May explain simply how the play to earn model works. What are the most relevant cases of earning money by playing games and buying houses and cars and earning money for a living by playing games? Sounds revolutionary.
Yeah, well, I think it is. I mean, as I've said before, we've sort of had this before. So we've had, particularly in the MMORPGs, you know, for 20 years, people have, you know, accumulated assets and then sold them on, you know, illegally on various sort of websites. So we've sort of had play to earn there, you know, particularly, I guess it first came to kind of prominence with World of Warcraft, and lots of people in China were sort of farming out this gold and then selling it to people in the West, and that was sort of how they made their living. So we've had that before, sort of illegally. You know, I don't actually personally don't like the term play to earn very much. I can understand why people are using it, because obviously earning money is a sort of important part of our lives. But in a way, sort of every blockchain game is play to earn, because every blockchain game will have some sort of, you know, kind of asset that will be secured by a blockchain and then can be sort of sold on a blockchain, whether the developer specifically sets that up as an economy. You know, they'll just, if you have something on a blockchain, people will start trading them. That's just, you know, it's just human nature. So every blockchain game is play to earn. I guess the reason it's being used is some games are sort of more specifically set up and have a specific sort of feature where people come in and do a specific thing to earn a specific reward, and then that reward can be sold on. So obviously with Axie Infinity, people are, you know, doing the battles and earning the Smooth Love Potion, and the Smooth Love Potion is then, you know, you can use it to breed more Axies, or you can sell it for, you know, for other cryptocurrency, or you can sell it for, you know, cash it out for the, you know, currency that you use, your fiat currency. So, but I can kind of, yeah, and that's very powerful, I think, as an economic sort of tool, particularly for people in the developing world. So Axie, we see a lot of people in the Philippines and Indonesia and India, places like that, people playing that game either for additional money or for, you know, their entire salary now comes from playing those games. And I think in sort of, you know, kind of North America and Europe, we're much more economically advantaged. So I think for most of us, play to earn doesn't really work. So for someone in the Philippines, playing Axie Infinity and earning $30 a day is a big deal for them. You know, they probably can't earn $30 where they are, particularly if they're in a rural area. But for, you know, for me, spending all day playing a game and earning $30, you know, that's not so helpful to me. So I think it's a term that works in some parts of the world. I think it is a term that is not great. And I think game designers can get a little bit sort of caught up in it. So they basically design their entire game so people just come in and grind and earn a token, then just sell it on without thinking, you know, what's that token used for? Axie Infinity is useful because, or is well designed because you earn that token, but people actually want to buy that token to earn more axes. Whereas lots of games that I see, there's just a token and it's not very clear why you would want to earn that token. There's not a very strong game economic modeling around that. And those games, what they tend to do is they tend to get popular really quickly, and everyone's like, oh, wow. And then the token goes up in price because everyone's like, this game's got thousands of users. And then it just sort of collapses down and then no one plays it anymore and the sort of game's dead. So some people have started using the term play and earn, which I think is subtly different, but I think it's actually quite interesting. So I think that suggests you will play and you can earn some value. And for some people in the world, that may be a large proportion of their daily sort of salary. But for other people, you know, the reason that games are so successful as a sort of entertainment product is people love playing them. So for whatever it is now, 30, 40 years, people have played games because they love playing games without any money involved at all. You know, games have been 3 billion people play games because they love playing games. You know, the human brain loves messing around with things. So, you know, people play games without having money in there. If you have money in there, that's even better, but it can't be the whole thing. So it can't be, I think it'll be a sad thing if blockchain games purely become like a sort of a DeFi system. I mean, now people are talking about GameFi. I notice this is a term being used, so games and finance. And as I say, all blockchain games have some sort of financial system in there. And I think DeFi is super interesting for some aspects of games. But if we're just making games now that are just sort of ways of churning out tokens that we can sell on and there's no fun involved, then I don't think blockchain games will be successful. Now, I'm pretty certain that that won't be the case, so I'm not too bothered about it. And it is difficult because I think every game will find a balance between, you know, encouraging people to play their game to earn money, because obviously earning money is something that everyone cares about. I don't think there's anyone in the world who doesn't want more money. Even Elon Musk probably wants more money. There's more things he can do if he gets money quicker. So everyone wants to earn money. So that's a pretty powerful psychological driver. But equally, you know, the reason the games are successful, the most successful games are the ones that are the most fun to play, I think, kind of broadly speaking. So you need to sort of have a balance between the two.
Well, I would love to ask you, how the new players are being onboarded or recruited into the blockchain game. As I said before, I didn't know, even now, that the problem of onboarding people from traditional gaming to the block gaming exists. Is that problem exist? Does it exist? And why does it exist? And what are the main difficulties to onboard people to the blockchain gaming?
Yeah, so historically, the main issue with onboarding, which is kind of a weird term, fancy term for basically getting someone into your game. And that, obviously, the main problem is historically has been you've had to use something like MetaMask. So you've had to basically set up a blockchain wallet. And obviously that, for people who haven't done it, you know, it's not super complicated, but basically you have to basically write down typically 12 words. And that's your sort of key phrase, or, you know, your sort of private key, we call it. And you have to keep that. And if you lose that, everything in that wallet is gone. No one can recover that phrase for you. That's why it's called, you know, decentralization. You have to sort of be able to sort of look after that. And I think most of us in the world probably often forget our passwords to, you know, even to our banks, and we have to like write to our banks and, can you reset my password, please? So that kind of system is not very great for most people, because we can't, you know, we're not capable of sort of, you know, keeping these secret words secret and not losing them. But that was sort of the old generation of games. And now we see, particularly there's games like Splinterlands, which is like a card trading game, and Blanco's Block Party. And these games are blockchain games, but they sort of have a layer on them. So you basically just sign up with an email and a password. If you lose the email and password, they're nothing to do with the blockchain. Those can be recovered for you. And there are lots of other sort of ways that you can do, actually clever ways you can do, called social recovery. So you can actually set up a blockchain wallet and have ways of recovering it using maybe your friends or something like that. So there's lots of different ways of doing it, and that just makes obviously onboarding much easier. And if blockchain games, for blockchain games to go mass market, basically people will have to log on in exactly the same way they log on to any other game. So we can't be asking people for sort of you know, complicated key kind of structure. So I think that's sort of happening, and certainly the game developers I talk to now are basically, you know, understand that, because they've spent, you know, years working out that, you know, if someone wants to come and play your game, you can't have any friction in the way of them. You know, you have to just let them sort of come in and play the game as easily as possible. So I think the game developers and product managers understand all that sort of stuff. And there are sort of the infrastructure and the tools are becoming available that sort of allow linking between an easy login process and an actual sort of proper sort of blockchain security as well. So I think that's sort of a problem that is kind of historic, really. I don't see it being a problem going forward. I still think there are some issues with people having to understand that a blockchain item is sort of different to a normal game item. So these things are sort of unique, and you have to be a bit more sort of careful in how you look after accounts and things. But I think that sort of will come out over time.
Well, you know that everybody loves to play games, and old guys and young guys and middle-aged guys. Do you see any difference, or don't see any difference, in perception of different generations? How Generation X perceive blockchain gaming, or Generation Z, 8, 7 years old, babies perceive blockchain gaming? Do you see any difference?
I mean, it's a difficult one. It's quite sort of anecdotal. I've not seen any research data around that. I think in general, we kind of see that, you know, it's always the sort of the younger generation is always just more, you know, understands things kind of in a more easy sort of way. So I guess, you know, maybe not in terms of blockchain, but in terms of, say, like, you know, like the app Robinhood, which allows people to buy shares. So, you know, before those sort of apps came in, there's obviously various sort of different sort of similar things. You know, to own a share was like really difficult. You had to like set up a complicated, go through a complicated website and put in your sort of bank details, and they probably had to check you were like a real person or something. You know, and just no one did it because it was super difficult, but because it took like half an hour, and then had to verification took a week or something. And then something like Robinhood comes in, and basically it's your phone, you're always on there, you basically connect it to, you know, whatever kind of payment system you've already got on your phone, and then you can just buy shares. And of course, what do? They don't sit there researching which is the best kind of share to buy in terms of fundamental kind of profit earnings ratio. They just go, I'm gonna buy Tesla, and this stock's gone up 100%, I'll buy some of that. So I do kind of think the younger generation, just, you know, if you make things easy for them, they just sort of go for it. So I kind of think that will be the big takeoff point. I think kind of crypto does, there's people sort of get crypto in the sense that they buy Dogecoin. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we won't discuss, I guess, in this podcast. But they sort of, I think they understand sort of the meme nature of it. They don't worry too much about the fact they don't understand everything. So I kind of think that they will onboard sort of very quickly, but maybe not have a kind of great understanding of exactly what's going on. I think at the moment, probably most of the people in sort of blockchain games, I would say, are probably, you know, 30s and older. So those are probably the people who sort of got into kind of Ethereum sort of 2015, 16, 17, and probably, you know, think about things a bit more seriously. So I think at the moment, we're still a fairly small kind of audience of people who play blockchain games. And we're probably like overly sort of geeky, and overly kind of thinking about computers. Whereas I think, you know, for games to go mass market, where you've got a few, you know, hundreds of millions of people playing blockchain games, that's going to be, you know, maybe a few years down the line. But those sort of people will just sort of get it. And they won't worry too much about the detail. They'll just sort of, they'll just be sort of part of their lifestyle. And I think you kind of see that with the NFT stuff now, is very meme-y. You have people like Gary V doing NFT projects, and a lot of that stuff you can kind of see. A sort of slight change in attitude and a kind of not overcomplicating, not overthinking what these things are value, just sort of enjoying them.
Yeah, I should ask you about the future. How do you see the future of blockchain gaming, metaverses, utilizing NFTs in gaming?
Yeah.
In, let's say, 3 upcoming years.
I think that's 2 separate things. I think games and metaverses have some similar aspects, but I think are very different. I think on the game side of things, you know, maybe in the longer term, over 10 years, I can't see why pretty much every game wouldn't use blockchain to some degree. Now, I don't think that means every game's going to have NFTs or every game's going to have a cryptocurrency, but I think every game is going to use blockchain in some way. And if you think about, you know, general games now, every game uses the internet in some way. So even like a single player narrative game uses the internet for distribution, or uses the internet to do updates. Just because you've got the internet doesn't mean every game is a sort of multiplayer game. Although obviously over time we've seen most games have now a multiplayer aspect because the internet's there. So I think over time every game will have some sort of blockchain aspect, and I think over time they will have more complex blockchain interactions. I just can't see how that isn't going to happen. I should point out that doesn't necessarily mean they're all going to be running on Ethereum. I think you can run games on private blockchains. So it doesn't always have to be sort of the sort of classic open, decentralized sort of blockchain that I guess kind of us kind of kind of crypto enthusiasts like. The metaverse stuff I think is a lot more complicated in just the sense of the products are a lot more complicated, because I don't really know, when people use the word metaverse, you sort of, I think everyone uses the metaverse in a slightly different way. It's a useful term because everyone sort of thinks they know what everyone else means, but I think it is quite difficult to work out what a metaverse is. To me, you know, do we have, some people use it as like there's one metaverse and basically everyone kind of logs into the thing called the metaverse and everything's in the metaverse. But that seems unlikely to me. It seems much more like, excuse me, there'll be multiple sort of metaverses, like, you know, at the moment we have multiple sort of projects in any space. And they're sort of, but they will be linked together so that you can take assets from some into others. And but I think it's much more messy sort of evolution. And you know, even on a personal level, I'm not so terribly sure I'm interested in spending all my time in the metaverse or even a metaverse. I kind of think that's sort of a little bit depressing, maybe. I don't know. It could just be me being maybe kind of younger people find that brilliant and everything will be in there, but I don't know. I can kind of see some really interesting experiences. I guess we all, you know, if you played around with VR headsets, yeah, they're great, they're really interesting, there's really interesting things you can do there, but would I want to be sort of doing that, wearing that all the time in some sort of big world that everyone else is in? You know, we've got a big world that everyone else is in, it's called the world. so I think the metaverse has to be different to that, yeah, I'm not really sure in my own head what a metaverse is, and I'm not really sure. I've not really heard many good examples from the people who are talking about metaverses of exactly what it is. So I don't think anyone knows. So I think the metaverse is a bit further off, really. I think it's definitely not Ready Player One. I think that is the. It's funny because everyone uses Ready Player One as the, this is what the metaverse is, and I think to me that's the example of what the metaverse definitely is not. But we'll see.
Yeah, gotcha. Finally, John, I would like you to. Answer, what is the best way to learn, follow the industry, to learn what's going on, what are the news in developing non-blockchain game? Maybe you could mention your personal ways, okay, of learning, your personal resources. How do you learn about the news, about the developing of the industry?
I think, say, if you're interested in a particular project, obviously Discord is massive, so everyone has these massive sort of Discord groups. Personally, I'm not a massive fan of Discord. So I just spend quite a lot of time on Twitter. So Twitter is really strong for crypto blockchain games. And you can sort of find out the people there who are interested in the same things as you. You kind of, you know, at the moment it's quite difficult because there's loads of new projects. Like every week there's sort of new interesting projects going on. So it's quite sort of hard to you know, I don't think there's no one person who knows everything that's going on. It's just much too big now. So something like Twitter is useful to find sort of like-minded people who like the same things as you. Discord, Telegram to a degree. I think Telegram's used sort of less than it used to be. You know, there's quite a lot of good kind of websites and stuff out there now. So there's eGamers, there's a Play to Earn. I've got a YouTube channel called Blockchain Gaming World, which is pretty, I do quite a lot of updates on that. So there's kind of stuff happening. I think the other thing is just to, the only way I learn, really, you can read about these things and you sort of learn something, but the only way to really sort of start to understand them is to actually sort of start playing them and getting involved with them. So I think if there's something that takes your attention, then you do have to sort of go deep into some things. You have to go, right, I'm going to play this and do I actually enjoy it? So I think you can sort of learn sort of broadly, these are the sort of games that are coming out there. But if there's something that sort of piques your attention, then the only way I've really learned about things like Axie Infinity or Splinterlands, and they have a lot of deep features, so you really have to sort of spend, you know, you can't just go in and play once, you have to sort of go in and spend a few months sort of playing these things to actually really understand the power of them. So I think as an example, actually Splinterlands probably is, I would say it's sort of my first blockchain game. You know, I really like it, been playing it for a year and a half now, and I think it's the easiest way to sort of understand how a blockchain game works. So it's a trading card game. Personally, I'm not a massive fan of those, but it's sort of simple enough that even I can use it, so that's a thumbs up. And it's very easy to get into. You don't have to spend any money to begin with. You can try it out free to play. Then if you do want to sort of go deeper into it, it's like $10 to get the blockchain kind of side of things. That's not too expensive. And it's that's a good starting point.
Yeah, great answer. Learn by practice. That's the essence. So thank you very much, Sean. It's been a fascinating conversation. Super educational for starting for newcomers. So, ladies and gentlemen, please pay your attention to the blockchain gaming and NFT. Thank you for listening. You are watching the NFT podcast. It is supported by the NFT protocol. Please like, share, Command subscribe. Don't forget to hit the bell button. We're not missing the future episodes. We're publishing daily in English and Russian. Don't forget to join the third edition of CGC Online NFT Conference. We will be moderating some fireside chats there with John and me. So join blockchain gaming, join the future. The future is now. John Jordan, Eugene, aka Crypto MC. We're with you. Thank you for listening and see you in the next episodes of the NFT podcast. Bye-bye.